So in episode 43, when we talked about advocating for our kids at school, it brought up a lot of questions about what happens after school, after graduation, after they receive a certificate and they're entering adulthood. And luckily, we have a very good friend, Sierra Holmes, who was just the perfect person to share that information, tell us the options that caregivers and parents have in helping their special needs person, child, teenager, transition into adulthood, the services that they offer, the options that they have, and what that looks like. I learned so much, and it really helped me not be so scared about that transition, because I think about it a lot with my daughter Addie and what her life looks like, and making sure that she can advocate for herself as best she can and fulfills her purpose and does things that that give her life meaning and fulfillment.
Right. And I think that lots of our audience can, you know, like that's a parent desire for all kids, and we have a lot of people that listen because of their relationship or the way they relate to your story. So today we're speaking with Sierra Holmes. She works for a Indianapolis-based company called Opportunities for Growth, which sets kids up for success after high school with jobs and skills and the things that they need to be independent to the best of their ability and to, for the respect and dignity that they, just like anyone else, deserve. So that's a good conversation that we're going to have today, and we're excited to share that with you. Before we jump into that, just a reminder that we are prepping right now for an upcoming episode where we answer questions from listeners. So if you have any question, I mean, any topic, we're just like, it's going to be all over the board. We've got some coming in right now, and there's really no way to organize them into topic besides they're just a lot.
Yeah, we might just cut them up, put them in a hat, and pull them out and see what happens.
It's like a little pop quiz for us.
Yeah.
So if you have a question or something you would like to hear more about from Jess or I, you can email us or submit them through social media. Go to our Facebook page, go to notterriblepodcast.com, or our email, which is notterriblepodcast@gmail.com. And we will feature those on an upcoming episode. All right. Hope you enjoy this conversation.
Welcome to Not Terrible with your hosts, Jess Hooker and Mary Graham. Jess is a part-time vegan yogi. You can find her on her motorcycle, usually heading to therapy. Mary is a writer and Jesus follower. She loves camping almost as much as cheeseburgers. The Not Terrible podcast is two childhood friends who have been through the ringer, learned some tough lessons, and kept going. Jess and Mary share stories, advice, and lessons on each episode. They try to find humor in the chaos and learn from their mistakes in an attempt to feel less alone as they navigate life's journey.
Hey guys, today we are speaking with Sierra Holmes, and she is a plus-size fashion blogger and creator of Eclectic Curves. She lives in Indianapolis, Indiana, and she is married, and she's the mom of two very beautiful children. So we asked Sierra today to come on and just kind of talk a little bit about another hat she wears. Yes, she's a this world famous blogger and social media person, but we are, and we love that part of her, but we're a little more today interested in what she does for her full-time day job, which is what do you do during the day, Sierra?
So during the day, I actually work in human resources for a company in Fishers called Opportunities for Positive Growth. And we're in human services, and we work with individuals that have intellectual and developmental disabilities in a variety of ways.
So this obviously is a little bit closer to home for me. Sure. I have a daughter who's she'll be 14 in October, and she has a severe cognitive disability due to extreme seizure activity. So her ability level has declined in the last 7 years and will continue to decline. And I mean, best case scenario, plateau at some point in her adulthood. So we just took her off of the diploma bound track here this year since she's been in seventh grade and made the decision to put her on a certificate plan. And so in our school system, the year that they turn 14, we start gearing them towards what are you going to do after high school. And also here in the state of Indiana, when you're in a program like Addie is, you have the option to stay in school, in public school, until you're 22 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess my question is, when do you and the company you work for, when do you start working with children for that transition period?
So, you know, typically, and it depends on what service, you know, and their waiver. There's a lot of things that go into that. But we typically work with the school system and the parents once that transition plan has been set. We work with a lot of schools that have, you know, kids that they work with up until the age of 22. And during that time frame, they bring us in to talk about next steps for employment. If someone is interested in working, if the person that you're supporting is interested in finding a job or they're wanting to start other services, typically you go through the process of getting a waiver. And once you receive your waiver, we are a service provider on the waiver in the state of Indiana. So you get to choose who you go to, and we're one of the companies that you would choose. So we actually step in kind of after that transition is being set by the guardian or the parent and the school system, and then you would choose a waiver based service after that.
Okay. Okay. So, and would you say in your experience that your options are generally the three that you've already named, which are a child could go to college or further their education, they could get a job, or they could continue services, just different services, I guess, not services offered by the school system anymore. Is there a fourth or a fifth option that I'm not aware of? Because those are the three that I wrote down that would happen, but I was like, I wonder if there's something else you could do.
So I don't think that they have to, like, each one of those is in its own lane. You know, here at OPG, we work with individuals who are receiving services from us, but they're also looking for, you know, gainful employment, you know, and they're in that age range, that 18 to 22 age range. In our self-directed services department, which is our residential supported living, which means we work with people in their homes and out in the community. We don't have any day programs. We actually come to you, to your home.
Okay.
We start working with kids at 18. So we start working with adults at 18 and go up from there. So there are a few adults in our program that are still in school with guardians that we work with, you know, until the age of 22. So there really shouldn't be just one way. And OPG we pretty strongly believe that you don't just have to go to school. You don't just have to go find a job. You know, we feel really strongly like that it's important for us to help you make decisions on what you want to do. And then we're going to help you achieve that. So there are a lot of people that we support who want to continue their education and they're looking for gainful employment. So I don't think that you have to pick just one.
Just
OPG
one.
Doesn't do. Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's awesome. That's good to hear. Right now, they're very active in age-appropriate and ability, how Addie can start advocating for herself and saying, this is what I want to do when I grow up, mm-hmm. or this is what I want to do when I get out of school. Is self-advocacy a part of your program? Because that's a big concern for me. I've been so vocal in Addie's life and making these decisions that I want to make sure that, you know, and I think that when they do get that old, they don't want their mom doing it all the time. Even, you know, in Addie's situation, she's like, back off. Do you guys have programs to where you help them advocate for themselves?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, self-advocacy is really at the foundation of who we are as an organization. You know, throughout OPG's early growth, you know, we have just really strove to set apart from others by focusing on bettering person-centered care. So, you know, our care is based off of the individual, and we want to make sure that they play an active role in their own care, in their own decision-making, and they feel independent. We provide just so many different services that promote self-reliance and growth, focusing on the person. So that really is at the foundation of what we do. We actually do something called dream management with all of the people that we support, where we have these interviews with them just to make sure that we're on track with helping them achieve their dreams, whatever that is. However we fit into that dream, it's important to us as an organization that we're having those one-on-one conversations with the person we're supporting so that they know that we are just as invested as they are. So I firmly feel that this population of people need to understand how important it is to self-advocate for themselves. You know, there are so many times where the people we support have been overlooked and haven't been given the choice to make a choice for themselves. And it just completely goes against our company culture to not put that choice back in their hands.
To know that you're doing things to make them self-aware and raise their confidence. And I think that that just all plays into being able to advocate for yourself. So you're talking about the things that you guys offer. What are the responsibilities of the caregivers and the schools leading up to finding you and working with you when they turn 18?
Yeah, so, you know, like I said, we're kind of out of it until you have a waiver. So that really is kind of up to the guardian or the parents to file all that paperwork with the state to determine, you know, if you can receive a waiver. You know, there are a lot of individuals that we support who have had IEPs during school, you know, who then go on to qualify for waiver-based services. And there's three different kinds of Medicaid waivers. They all have different purposes. And you can actually go on, you know, if you go on the internet and you just search Medicaid waivers, it kind of breaks down the different ones. I'll give you the names of them. There is the HCBS waiver. You know, this allows home and community-based services for people who need long-term care. So if you're talking about someone who after school is going to need someone with them 24/7, or they're going to need a buddy to step in and be with them from time to time, then you're probably going to be more interested in the HCBS waiver. And a lot of times we see people use this waiver to stay in their own home or community setting instead of going to like a nursing home or a facility.
Okay.
The next waiver, Medicaid waiver, would be the Freedom of Choice waiver. And that waiver states, it provides care via care delivery system, so it limits the individual's ability to choose their own provider. So that is not one that we use typically a lot. We see a lot of people come through with the HCBS waiver here at OPG. And the last one is the research and demonstration waiver, and it lets states test out new approaches to delivering Medicaid care and financing. So that's just kind of a high-level look at the different types of waivers, but if you go, like I said, online, you can read more in depth and find out what makes the most sense for you. Once you have been approved for waiver-based services, you'll get a list of providers that fit into those waiver-based services, and then you can choose from there who you would like to work with. OPG is on that list, and it's kind of like interviewing who do I want to give my money to? Who do I want to invest in? Who do I think is going to be a great culture fit for my family and the person that I'm, you know, getting services for? And we provide 5 separate services here at OPG. You can do self-directed services, which is that in-home care with our direct support professionals who work in the home and out in the community with the people we support. You can also do behavioral support services. So you can have a behavioral specialist work with the person who you're getting services for, waiver-based services for. We also provide music therapy. And honestly, in the state of Indiana, we have the top music therapy department. It's just great therapy for working with, you know, kids and adults alike. So both our behavioral support and music therapy start with children. And so we have, like, I think right now the youngest we have is a year old and up to 88. So a wide range of people that we support in behavioral and music therapy. And then occupational therapy is a new service that we offer. We just started that at the end of last year. You know, it's a great service to work on sensory processing, social participation, fine motor skills, and gross motor skills. We also offer that for private pay too, but, you know, as I'm sure you know, private pay is very expensive.
Yes.
So it's better to have a waiver to kind of help to offset those costs. And then lastly, we offer employment services. So when you're talking about someone that you know, you support that has an intellectual or developmental disability that is interested in finding gainful employment. And that's very important to us. We want to make sure that we are helping you find your dream job, whatever that is. We are now really proud to offer employment services to help for our job coaches to help people find jobs that they really want to have. So those are kind of the five services that we offer. You would take a look at those services and decide, okay, based off of my waiver, do any of these make sense for the person that I'm supporting? And then they can help decide what services they want to take on. I also want to stress that one of the most important things about this is that it's the choice of the person, and they would be hiring us. So at any given time, any provider that you have, if you are unhappy with the service, you can fire them and you can go and find another provider. You're not stuck with a single provider. You know, it's really important that you advocate for yourself and that you're getting what you need. This is your life. And if you're not satisfied with your service, you can go and find a new provider.
Who needs a transition plan? Like how do you know if your child needs a transition plan other than the school has said, hey, this is what we need to do?
Yeah, you know, I don't know if I can answer that fully because it's so situational. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think, you know, you're going to get feedback from the school that's going to let you know, if there have been behaviors that have come up, things that have made them question whether or not the person is on this, quote, unquote, you know, normal path or, you know, this in the box. I like right. to say, you know, in the box path, if the person is falling outside of the box, and the school is going to start to have conversations with you about that. I also think it's once you get to a certain age, it's having conversations with your child about when they're, you know, age appropriate conversations about how they're feeling about school and how they're feeling about the social setting and what they need. I think once your child is old enough, they should start really coming with you to, if they can, to IEP meetings and really playing an active role in their own future. And I think all of those things together combined with your feelings and communication from your doctors will kind of help you decide whether or not you want to continue on the in the box path or if you need to try something different.
Okay. And how much do you work with medical doctors and therapists outside of your organization?
You know, we have our own therapists. We have our own behavioral support clinicians here on staff. We may partner through quarterly meetings with third party doctors, but that is something that the parent or the guardian would set up.
Right.
So we wouldn't do any of that.
Okay. So we've talked a lot about maybe purpose or interests such as or education, college, job, and whatnot. What about living arrangements? Do they stay at home with their family? Do they live independently? Do they go to a group home? Is that something that you also offer services for?
Yeah, so we offer supported living services. You know, at this point, this is someone who is saying, I want to stay at home or I want to live on my own, and I need services to help me to be able to do that. So we, in the state of Indiana, you have to have 5 individuals that live in a home together for it to be considered a group home. And here at OPG, we don't typically take on more than 2 or 3 people per house, per site. Mm-hmm. And it's all supported living. So it's in a home setting. It's in their home. And so we come in after you've made the decision on whether or not you want to stay at home or if you want to go to a facility.
What about social interaction and the role that you guys play with that? Just the, you know, things that they enjoy that they just want to have more of a part in? Or do you guys host social events and things that they can do together?
Yeah, we do both. So a big part of our plan is community integration. So it's really important to us that, you know, the people we're supporting are going out in the community and building what we call natural support. So that's friendships, you know, closer relationships with family. You know, the opposite is who we are, which is paid supports. We want you to foster those natural supports, build those natural relationships. You really can't do that if you're just hanging out at home. So we're very invested in going to community events, you know, so that there's inclusion. We want to see people who have disabilities right alongside people who do not have disabilities, you know, doing the same things and really working together and enjoying each other's time. So we advocate for that very strongly. If we're not doing something out in the community, OPG does host from time to time different events where the people we support who normally don't get a chance to see each other can come together and hang out. We have hosted a program called Dinner with Friends. A lot of the people in our self-directed services department have come together and gone to dinner together, to the movies together. It's just a great way to fellowship and create those moments to have those natural support conversations and build natural relationships.
Do you have any stories or any that just kind of hold a place in your heart of success or overcoming or things working out just exactly as they should?
Tons of success stories. Sure. Things working out exactly how they should. Oh, I don't know. You know, I think we always can set out with a plan that things are going to go a certain way, and then life has a way of kind of changing all of that all the time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we've been so fortunate to see people really excel and advocate for themselves and become more independent. I think it's important to us. At the end of the day, it's our job. We feel to work ourselves out of a job. Hmm. We think there's a lot of people that are out there who need support, and there's nothing that makes us happier to see someone who comes to us who needs 24/7 care, who's having significant behavioral issues, who doesn't have a natural support system, to then turn around and become someone who is vibrant with friends. They're more independent. You know, they need us less and less and less. We call that fading supports. We're trying to fade away mm-hmm. from being all the time. We want to help you get your life back, you know, and help you determine what that looks like for yourself. And anytime we have someone who we support, who we've needed to be around quite a bit, who only needs see us a couple of times a week now, or you know, maybe they just see us every now and then and they don't have as many services, we consider that a success if they're happy and they're chasing their dream.
I think it's important also to say that most parents kind of come into this and they need help. Like, I don't think that's a bad thing to ask
right.
or say, like,
right.
man, this wasn't in the baby books, or this is not how I saw this going, and I'm going to need I'm going to need all the resources that you have, and you can teach me how to be the best parent for this, or the best caregiver for this lovely person that we get in our lives. Like, that, I think having that option, I know even for me, who doesn't have many struggles with mm-hmm. the same way Jess does, like, I still don't know how to do things, like, as just a every day, mm-hmm. There's always something I'm like, well, I'm not sure if I'm doing this right. But
right.
So if I could have a team that would kind of tell me how to do it better, that'd be amazing.
You know, and I would say, like, so just from personal experience, you know, and you'll find too in human services, a lot of people are drawn to this industry, and because we have a personal connection with someone who has a disability or who has been, you know, diagnosed recently with an intellectual or developmental disability. And that could be something really mild, or it could be something pretty severe. And you see the full gamut here. And even in our Fisher's office, everyone here in some way has been touched by an individual with a disability. And, you know, personally, you know, I have a son that is extremely hyperactive and was recently diagnosed with ADHD. And there's something about what we do when you come to human services. You're all of the people that we work with are people who, like I said earlier, don't fit inside the box. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have a kid who is one of those kids, you know, he just didn't fit inside the box. And there's something about what we do that normalizes that. And, you know, and you, it's normal, I think, as a parent to feel inadequate and to feel confused and to have lots of questions and to be frustrated and to not really get it and understand. And I think OPG does a great job of helping you to understand that it's not your fault, this is okay. Mm-hmm. We're here to help. Here's what we can do. And we support you all the way through. I mean, the communication between the different departments, we have several people who receive a lot of different services from us. And these professionals show up every single day to communicate with each other about your person, to make sure that we're all on the same page and that we're giving you the best communication so that you feel at ease and you feel like we're making a difference in their lives. And I think that's really important that when you do choose a provider, when you get to that point, that you find someone who really is invested, you know, and has like a personal connection and investment in the community. So, yeah, I mean, it's tough. You know, my kid isn't even out of elementary education yet, you know, and I know sitting in IEPs and working with, you know, behavioral support specialists and working with the school system, you know, it can be very intimidating and it's very stressful. And especially when you're sitting in an IEP meeting across from 8 or 9 different people who are all mm-hmm. talking about just you, you know, or you and your spouse who are showing up to defend this person to make sure that dignity and respect is kept intact during the conversation. But I do want to stress that help is good. You know, I think it's important to get all of the different information, get all of the different perspectives, because that's going to help you to make a decision that is going to really help propel your person to more independence later or just a more well-rounded life later. So I wouldn't shy away from the help. I would take in all the information that you're getting from the school. I would share that information with your therapist if you have one. I would share that information with your doctors. But ultimately, the decision does come back to you. You know, you need to make a decision that makes the most sense for you and your family.
I liked your phrase, like, doesn't fit in the box. Now, mm-hmm. I don't know if this is just as I get older or my heart is softening or my eyes are just being opened, but us as humans, we want everyone to fit into this little teeny tiny box. And if you don't, something is wrong with you. And I think as I've gotten older, and even as an educator, like I was trained that all my students will fit in this box. And so this is how you teach kids. And I hope that we're understanding that the box needs to be a lot bigger than what we originally constructed. And if in education and, you know, interacting with humans in general, like we have this tendency to make sure that everyone is the same. And if they're not, it's wrong. And that's a heartbreaking way to like interact with just people in general. So I know just in talking with Jess, like the struggles that she has of making sure her wonderful daughter isn't put in this box that maybe wasn't constructed the right way anyway. Like there's just this whole like push of why do we all have to be the exact same anyway? There's nothing wrong.
Yeah. And our situation was Addie developed, she was born, she was born with an abnormality in her brain that the symptoms didn't surface until she was 7 years old and she started to have seizure activity. And up until then, we just knew she was a little bit behind the norm. She was a little bit behind
the baseline.
Yeah. And so we just thought, okay, she's also the second child, and her brother, you know, talks for her and does all these things, and we didn't think much of it. And then when this happened, it made a lot of things make sense. The thing mm-hmm. is that in our community and in our school system, there'd never been anybody like Addie, somebody that we're going to watch digress year after year after year, and a child that goes into school and it looks like she mastered something one day and she's completely forgotten it because of seizure activity the next. And so her father and I had to sit into these meetings and basically build her IEP, this education plan that they've never had to do before. And how do we grade a child who like has amnesia, for lack of a better term, in her situation? And there's not, and so I can't imagine for anybody that's in this situation, there's not a book. There's not a book when you go into your first IEP meeting and they say, this is what you ask and this is what you expect. And luckily we do have a big pamphlet that's called Your Parental Rights when you sit mm-hmm. in there and what by law they are obligated to provide for you. So that is very helpful. I know that they present them to us in every meeting, but I really suggest you actually sit down and read through it. If you are in that situation, it's very helpful. There's also advocates that are available. You would just have to, you just Google, you know, Indiana advocates or whatever state you're in, and the state does provide advocates in situations that you feel like you're not receiving the services or what you were supposed to be provided and your child was supposed to be provided. Those things are, they're not following through on their end. There's not a book for this. So unfortunately, it's a baptism by fire situation. You don't know until you are there and in the trenches with these educators and with these people providing these services. And it's a learn as you go. And it brings me so much comfort and joy knowing that I actually don't have to do this forever by myself. I have services right. like you guys that when she gets older and she is supposed to be out in the world making a life for herself, that you with us are going to help us reach her full potential. That just, I mean, I want to cry. It makes me so happy because from the moment that she was diagnosed and we realized how this was going to go, one of my biggest fears has been, what does adulthood look like?
Right. Yeah. And it's a common fear that we hear from parents and guardians. You know, this is your child. You know, this is someone who you want to make sure, you know, to your point, Jess, that they're going to be able to reach their full potential. I think as parents, that's all we want, you know, and to know that there are people out there who are dedicated to that cause, I think is very comforting. You know, we have got to break this stigma that different is bad. You know, I mean, it's not, it's just different. And that just means that we need to provide more individualized care, you know, to our students, to our young adults, to our adults, to make sure that they are going to be able to reach their full potential. And, you know, I think having advocates, you know, you can have advocates come to your IEP meetings, you know, who can sit with you and be there to kind of help level the playing field for you when you're sitting through those meetings. You know, I know we have brought behavioral therapists with to our meetings, to our, you know, just for our personal, for our family, just to help understand what's going on, to help ask the right questions if you don't know what to ask. You know, I'll tell you, after a couple of IEP meetings, though, you get pretty good at yep. what you want to ask. So, like, don't think that you're not going to get this. You know, one of my messages out to there to parents who are going through that is, you know, just keep showing up for your kid, and, you know, just keep putting them first in those meetings and making sure, again, that their dignity is intact. And, you know, make sure you're paying close attention to the language that's being used when they're writing the IEPs, and that you're comfortable with the language. Make sure it's person first. If the person that they are talking about isn't at the beginning of everything that they're saying, if they're not putting them first, if they're putting labels on them before them, then I would ask them to change the language. You can adjust any IEP. Yep. You know, you have to say so as guardian, as a parent, when you are sitting in that room, to say, you know, I am not comfortable with that statement. I would like us to reword that, you know, really advocate for your kid. They need you to do that. It's very important. The school's trying to just do a good job, you know, but they're not you, yeah. you know, and you have to show up and you have to advocate. But I mean, there's just so much help out there, and there's just an entire industry of individuals who want to be that support and help.
Okay, I'm going to end with this question. Can you think of like a major do or a major don't as a caregiver or a parent in a situation when they're looking for services?
I would just say to consider the person's feelings more so than your own. You know, we've just run into situations with guardians. You know, you mean well, parents mean well, you know, and you want things to go a certain way because you think they should. But I would just caution making a decision for someone without actually asking them and sitting down with them and building that plan together. That's why I stress how important it is to get your child involved in IEPs if they can, to really have conversations with them about their future as early as possible, you know, age-appropriate conversations, because that is how you teach self-advocacy, and that's how you make sure that we're not building a plan that you want, that we're building the plan that the person wants.
That's very helpful. we are going to share all of your information in our show notes, but really quick, if you would just share again the company that you work for and that way people, and where to find it.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I work for Opportunities for Positive Growth. We are located in Fishers, Indiana. That's where our corporate office is. You can find us online at www.opgrowth.com. On our website too, there's a wealth of resources for all of the other services that you would need before you came to us as well, under our resources page and all of our other services and just a history of our company as well.
Great.
And so subject change real quick. If people want to see how fabulous you are.
Yes, that was, yeah, that, we have to touch on this.
Where would they go? Tell us about your website and Instagram just real quick, because we cannot have Sierra Holmes on the podcast without saying what your other full-time job is and how people will love you there too. Well, so where do you blog?
So I blog at eclecticcurves.com, and that's curves with a K. I always say that because, you know, eclectic. We had to do something fun. So you can find me on eclecticcurves.com. You can find me on all social channels at Eclectic Curves. And come hang out with me. I try to be, you know, transparent about my life and along the way show you fabulous outfits and inspire you to love your body.
Yes. Awesome.
We're here for that too.
Thank you so much, Sierra. We appreciate your time.
Well, thank you guys. Have a great day.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye, Sierra. Thank you.
You've been listening to Not Terrible with Jess Hooker and Mary Graham. Connect with the podcast on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Not Terrible Podcast. Visit them at notterriblepodcast.com for show notes and additional content. You can sign up for their newsletter to receive bonus episodes and podcast extras. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast provider. Not Terrible is recorded in conjunction with The Chick McGee Show and Off the Air Podcast. Recorded in the Front Room Studio, this has been a Waco production.